You want to hear some classic country, honky-tonk, rockabilly, New Orleans R&B, funk, punk, found sound oddities, and other free-form fun all based around a single theme? Then be sure to tune in to The Lee Show, Tuesday nights from 9 to 11 p.m. right here on 97.3 FM WRIR, streaming online at www.wrir.org. You'll be glad you did.
You're listening to WRIRLP 97.3 FM, Richmond. This begins 1 hour of WRIR's locally produced programming. The views and opinions expressed herein do not necessarily reflect those of WRIR's board of directors, donors, or underwriters. Enjoy.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Inspire Indeed on WRIR LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. My name is Elaine Summerfield, and I'm your host for Inspire Indeed, where we're learning about community issues and the nonprofits and community leaders that are working to address them. Our hope is that you'll learn something new about our community and be inspired to think about how you might make a difference with your deeds. I'm really excited about today's show. We get to talk about a topic that I know pretty much nothing about. And I know I'll learn a lot, and I hope our listeners are going to learn a lot, too. Joining me here is Brendan Mitchell, who is the CEO of Crater Community Hospice, a hospice program that primarily serves folks from Chesterfield County and Tri-Cities part of our region. Correct? Welcome, Brenda.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you here. Before we get into the specifics of Crater Community Hospices programs, I'd love to get a better understanding of your work. I have to admit, I have some preconceptions about what hospice care looks like, and I have a feeling that they're probably pretty off. So why don't you give us some information about what hospice care really is?
Well, I think the best way to explain hospice care is to think first about hospice care being a philosophy of care. It's when a person, a family, has made a decision that the focus of their care, the focus of the care that they're receiving, is now going to be comfort, symptom management, and total support to the family. And this usually happens at a time when a person has a life expectancy of 6 months or less. Okay. And again, that prognostication is based upon what we know about diseases and that type thing. So, you know, that's a guideline for the physicians and for us to know when a person, you know, begins that care. But it is a philosophy of care. Sometimes people think it's a place that you go, a building. But it really is a philosophy of care, and then all the different services that go along with that.
So hospice care, I do think of a hospice house or something, but it's not just in a house. It's also other places?
Right. When hospice first started in Europe, there were houses where people went to stay and were cared for when they were dying. But in the United States, most of hospice care is provided in the home setting. And that could also be a nursing home or an assisted living where that person calls that their home. There are, throughout the United States, there are programs that do have buildings where they do have rooms where people can stay. And usually those are rooms that are used when a person needs a little more intensive medical care to get their symptoms managed. Some states have, you know, all states have different regulations. And in our state, you know, at this point we don't have just, you know, houses, other than there are a few that have houses where people can stay, and they're usually only can house a couple of people.
I see. Okay. Now, and it might be because wherever their home is not the appropriate setting for hospice care,
right,
or just what's best for them and their family.
Right. Okay. And most of the time with the families that we're working with, if it's too much for the family, if they're just overwhelmed with the care and they're just not able to manage all of that, sometimes then, you know, the family will look at nursing home, assisted mm-hmm. living, that type thing. But usually if we have a person in an inpatient setting, it's usually in one of our local hospitals for the symptom management, with the goal being they will go back to their home.
I see. Now, can you explain to me how – I also don't know what palliative care is. And I hear about them, palliative care and hospice care occurring at the same time. What's the difference? How do they work together?
Well, I think the best way to explain that is all hospice care is palliative, but not all palliative care is hospice. So a person may have a condition that we know that at this point there is no cure for this, but we're doing everything we can aggressively to treat this illness so that, you know, we can give the person the highest quality of life possible, and this may in turn, you know, prolong the person's life. So a person may be receiving palliative care, and that might be chemotherapy and radiation that they're getting, whereas when they come into hospice, usually they have completed all of those treatments, and again, the focus is on the symptom management and the total support to the family, and the treatment regime has completed. Mm-hmm. Because someone may need palliative care, and maybe while they are getting treatment, maybe they are having symptoms related to the treatments and need more support and need more help with that. And then that person, you know, maybe if it's such a thing as a palliative care program that some hospitals have, then, you know, they may then no longer be in that program once they are symptom managed, or they've completed all of that treatment.
Okay. So what sorts of things happen in palliative care? It's
still symptom management,
okay.
pain management.
Okay.
You know, it may be that they're needing help with nutrition. You know, all of those things that are being done is, again, it's for comfort and palliation of those symptoms.
Okay. I think I'm starting to get it. So, and you're working with patients and their families, mm-hmm. and helping families determine when the best time is to access hospice care. And you said a guideline that's used is when prognosis is 6 months or less.
Right.
Left in life.
And that's a guideline that is dictated to us by insurance company, Medicare. That's their guideline for when they're, you know, paying for that care. We want people to know about hospice care before they need it.
Mm-hmm.
So that they are aware of what hospice care is about. They know how to access the hospice program in their area. They have an opportunity to just ask questions and maybe just determine that is an option for them if they may need it. And usually when that happens, you know, people will then have an idea of, you know, if I have a terminal condition, then my goal would be to be able to stay at home and to have my symptoms managed and to make sure that my family is totally supported by a team of professionals and volunteers. And so we would hope that people would know about it. And then once they are diagnosed with something, a condition, and again, many people think for hospice we only work with cancer patients, but we work with cancer patients, we work with patients with heart disease, lung disease, any condition that can continue to progress and will probably be the cause of that person's death, whenever that may be.
Okay. And so how do families or individuals find out about the hospice program in their area?
Well, we would hopefully, if we're all doing a good job, we are trying to get information out into the community at all times. You know, our physicians, when people are in the hospitals, if people are, you know, in physician offices, just having information available. We like to go out and speak to groups. You know, we provide some educational resources, do some programs, that type thing, to make more people aware of hospice. But if they are told about hospice, or now's the time to look out, you know, to reach out for hospice, then there is a Virginia Association for Hospices and for Hospice and Palliative Care is our state organization.
Okay.
And people can certainly, you know, contact them, and we would then tell them the hospices that serve the area where they live.
I see.
Or if they ask their physician, then the physician, hopefully the physician would know what hospices are available in the area where they live.
So they'll learn a lot from their medical provider as well. So help me clear up some of my, I mentioned at the beginning, I think I have some misconceptions, because I'm still picturing somebody lying on their deathbed, and there's a very caring nurse there to sort of wipe their brow and say, do you need anything? But I'm sure there's a lot more to hospice care than that limited picture.
Right.
Tell me what might be accurate about that, and then what is missing from that picture.
Okay. Hospice care is provided by a team, as I said, a team of professionals and also some volunteers. So there is a nurse involved, but there's also a social worker involved. There's also hospice aides involved. There's also a chaplain for spiritual support. And then we have volunteers who do various things. So when a person accesses hospice care, again, we would like that to be at a time when the person is able to participate in the plan of care and planning what we're going to do to help this family. You know, we have patients who, you know, still drive. We have people who are, you know, out in the community. Yes, they have this illness, but they don't have to be homebound. Mm-hmm. They don't have to be bedbound. So we would begin by, you know, visiting with the family, making sure they have their medications, making sure, you know, if there's any equipment that needs to be put in the home, that's something we would be doing. And, you know, really just beginning to have conversation with the family about, you know, how they're doing and what we can do to support them at this point. So as things change, the amount of support and care we give is going to increase. So it may be that, you know, if the patient is with us 4 or 5 months, as their disease has progressed, then it probably is when they're dying, they will be bedbound.
Okay.
But if we've been coming in, then hopefully as things change, we're going to pick up on that quickly, and we're going to be able to initiate interventions so that before a person has tremendous pain, if pain is starting, then we start them on, you know, a low dose of a small medication, small amount of medication. But as their pain increases, then we can slowly increase that. Or any other symptoms that they may have.
I mentioned that working with families, too, you said you have experienced social workers in the home. And
sure.
So helping to address their needs. And I mean, there must be a process of helping the family recognize what's going on and kind of help them through
the process. And that's why it is holistic care. It's care for everyone. So sometimes the social worker may be talking with the entire family. Mm-hmm. There may be, you know, just one person who is needing some counseling. They work with children in the home to help them understand what's happening to their loved one, what to expect. You know, we do a lot of education and teaching about what to expect and what to look for, and that helps people, that helps to allay their anxieties, and they feel as if, well, okay, I know what to expect, and so when they see something, they don't panic. there's always a call. They can always call us 24 hours a day and, you know, ask questions, or the nurse will come back out, that type thing. But it does really help to when they know what to expect and they've had some education about what to do if you see this.
Right. Okay. So it's that care beyond the individual patient, but but the ripples beyond it.
Right.
Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM. We're talking with Brenda Mitchell from Crater Community Hospice. Brenda's been kind enough to come in and provide us with education about hospice care. Brenda, we haven't spent much time yet talking specifically about Crater Community Hospice, so I'd like to give you an opportunity to share more about Crater. Can you start by sharing a little bit about what programs Crater specifically provides?
Sure. As we've said, we provide the hospice care to families in the home setting. We also go into nursing homes. We also go into assisted livings and providing that actual hands-on care.
So you have a staff that includes the nurses and the social workers and the aides.
Okay. Right. So our staff is trained to provide hospice care and work with the families. If they're in another setting, such as a assisted living or nursing home, then we're also there to provide support to those caregivers, because we recognize that those caregivers are there with these persons for a lot longer than we are. We come in and we leave. Sometimes it's the families are not close by. So social worker, chaplain, nurse, we want to maintain some contact with those family members as well to keep them posted on how things are going and help them feel more connected with the hospice team. We also provide bereavement support, and that's support that we provide to a family for up to a year after the person dies.
Okay.
And at Crater, we also provide bereavement support to persons in the community who have suffered a loss but not used hospice services.
Tell me a little bit about what that is.
With our bereavement, you know, it may be that we look at that and talk with the family, and what's provided is what they feel like they need. You know, nothing is forced upon them, but we have the bereavement support groups are made available to them, whereas they can come in and meet with a licensed counselor, someone who is trained.
And that's a group setting, you said?
Mm-hmm, and that's a group setting, and we have those in various locations. Also, we have mailings that there's a very nice publication called Journeys that we send out to our hospice families. They get those out on a monthly basis. Volunteers who call to check in with family members. Some families we will give, you know, some one-on-one counseling through our social worker or our chaplain or our grief counselor. But we can't do that long-term, obviously.
Okay.
That's not why we're there.
Right.
But we also have memorial services. To give the family members an opportunity to come and, you know, have a memorial service with their hospice team.
Okay. Now might be a good time for you, Brenda, to share Crater Community Hospice's phone number and website if people want to learn
more. Sure. We are located in Petersburg, but as you said, we serve Chesterfield County and all the surrounding counties, Tri-Cities, all the way down to Greensville and Emporia. Our telephone number is 804-526-4300. And we're in the process of updating, making some changes to our website. But our website is www.cratercommunityhospice.org.
Okay, great. Well, that's some good information if people want to call you and learn more. Tell me a little bit more about what you said regarding bereavement services for people that have not been in your hospice care.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be individuals that have experienced a loss and they are looking for some support.
Right.
Right? So they can also come to your group.
Everyone grieves differently.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, you know, and the way people handle their grief is individualized, of course, but we want people to know if they have had a loss that there is a place where they can come and meet with a counselor or meet with others who have suffered a loss, and they can talk about that. And many times what people feel that they get most from these groups is the fact that they leave feeling as if, I know I'm normal. The things I've been feeling, you know, it's okay. And they need some, you know, they need to have that reaffirmed by someone else. But if a person has, you know, you can suffer a loss, a person can have a loss through many ways. And it may not be that it was even, you know, it could have been an accident, it could have been sudden death, or they just didn't seek hospice support. But we still know that bereavement is something that we want to have available to everyone.
So that's part of your mission, too. Well, how do patients and families pay for hospice care? You mentioned earlier that Medicare or some other insurance coverage that won't kick up unless it's 6 months or less. So how does that all work?
There is a Medicare hospice benefit, and many times people don't know about that because, again, they don't feel like they're need. You know, they don't think about the end of life. It's it's about what's happening now, right? We're always working on trying to get better.
Yeah.
Medicare does have a hospice benefit in the state of Virginia. Medicaid has a hospice benefit. And most insurance companies in the state of Virginia also have a hospice benefit. And that benefit is explained, you know, the support from the team members, and what they do. It also covers their medications that are needed to symptom manage them for that disease. It provides any medical equipment, hospital bed, those type things that they may need in the home. Any supplies that we need to provide care to that person due to the terminal diagnosis. So Medicare pays hospice for those services, and it's not billed to the nothing is billed to the family.
Medicare is billed directly by us,
and Medicare pays Crater Community Hospice direct.
I see.
Now, you know, it doesn't necessarily cover everything that what it costs for us to do the care that we provide, but that's the amount that Medicare pays us, and they pay us the same amount no matter what it is that that person needs. We get the same amount per day.
Right. So it may be more intensive services in one case, or maybe not as intensive in another, but same reimbursement rate. So sounds like you do still have needs for funding beyond what you can get from insurance or from Medicare. So how do you make up that difference?
Yes, we do. We are, you know, nonprofit, and so what we don't get from Medicare, we have to course, fill that gap. We have been in the community for 17 years, and we've been very lucky to have tremendous support from the persons in our community. So we do receive individual donations. We submit grants. We do fundraising activities. We've had other organizations who have done fundraising activities and
you're a beneficiary.
And we're the beneficiary.
Oh, that's always
so
nice.
So that's, you know, those are ways that we are able to do that. We also have a memorial garden, and we people may purchase a brick in honor of someone, in memory of someone, and that goes in our memorial garden, in our pathway, and then those funds also come directly into hospice, and everything that we are donated, everything that we receive is used to provide care to the families and the communities we serve, and it all stays in our community.
Okay. So you have an event coming up soon, right?
Yes, we do. We have an angel walk, and this is something that we have been doing the last few years, and we're doing it on November the 10th in because we're doing it around the time of Veterans Day. We do a lot of work with veterans as well. And so this is an angel walk. Anyone can participate. It's being held at the National Battlefield Park in Petersburg. It's a beautiful setting. And anyone who would like to participate in the walk, anyone who would like to, you know, make a donation or just come out and enjoy the day, we would be pleased to have them there.
And they can find information out where again?
They can find that on our website, or they can call us directly at 804 526 4300.
Great. And you mentioned also how volunteers help to fill in mm-hmm. your services and participate in the care of your clients, your patients. Can you talk a little bit about what volunteers
sure.
do?
We wouldn't be able to do all of the things we do if we didn't have volunteers because, again, as you're needing more funding, you know, you can't do all the special things. So our volunteers are wonderful. They actually go out into the home and provide some support and assistance to families. They work in the office doing clerical duties, sending out mailings. They work with our bereavement, making some bereavement calls.
So they can have, if they wish to, they can have some contact with the clients
yes.
themselves.
And mm-hmm. we want persons to know that if they have the desire to volunteer in their community, that, you know, if they come in and talk with us, that we will work with them and to find out, well, what skills do you have and what is it that you do like to do? And I'm sure that we can always find something for volunteers
to do. Find the appropriate match.
You know, they can also help with if we're doing any fundraising activities. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always things that volunteers can help us do, and that's that much more funds that we have to put back into the community.
That's great. Well, you know, before we go, we are getting close to the end of the show already. But I'm curious, you know, we're talking about death and dying, and, you know, it seems like it could be a really depressing job. But you've been there how long now, you said?
I've been a crater for 15 years.
So how do you keep it going, you know? I mean, what is it about your work in hospice that keeps you engaged?
Well, I think the one thing that keeps most of us engaged is the mission. We know we came to this work knowing what it's all about, and we came because we wanted to make this time better for our family. So I think what we do is we know we care for us. We have to care for ourselves. We have to care for each other, but we also have to know that we're getting a reward because of the families are letting us know, you know, how much it has been helpful to them.
So you can,
and we know that a person mm-hmm. dies with dignity and comfort and in the setting where he or she wants to be.
That makes it all worthwhile then, and makes it uplifting rather than a mm-hmm. depressing setting. Well, I want to say thanks to my guest, Brenda Mitchell, CEO of Crater Community Hospice, for coming in today. Brenda, I've really learned a lot. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks also to Jay Westerman for serving as Inspire Indeed's sound engineer, and to Bill Gulley, who is serving as our board operator today, one of our new volunteers here at the station. WRIR is a volunteers-powered station, and we deeply appreciate our listeners and underwriters that help support the station. My name's Elaine Summerfield, and you've been listening to Inspire Indeed. I hope you've learned something here today and that inspires you to think about making a difference with your deeds.